And I'd like us to return to the stories. And we'll start out with a special speaker, who's Kathy Tuttle, David's wife.
Oh, it's amazing up here, this whole sea of tie-dye. I love it. Love it. Well, David and I have nothing in common. He likes white rice. I like brown rice. He eats meat. I'm a vegetarian. I like to dig in the garden and make things out of clay, and David likes to keep his hands really clean. My idea of a perfect vacation spot is a tent in the wilderness. David's is a nice hotel with free Wi-Fi. When I play South Indian violin music, David runs out of the room with his hands over his ears. And when he listens to football on the radio, I roll my eyes and I run out of the room with my hands over my ears. I'm a painter. I'm a watercolorist. David is colorblind. I read literature. David reads trashy thrillers. David tells really bad jokes. I'm not funny. Actually, I'm kind of kinky, and David is, let's not go there. Okay. She says, thank you, Mom. Okay. David does the crossword puzzle. I do the Sudoku. I like to blow things up at places like Burning Man. And David is a little scared of lighting matches. It could be the beard. It's true. And yet, we've managed to agree on everything important in the last 30 years. We've traveled the world together. We're best friends. And, well, we do have two things in common sitting down there right now. So I'm here this evening listening to all the amazing things my husband has done. And I still don't know exactly what it is he does. But I'm very, very proud of him. And David is really proud and supportive of me, whether I'm building community groups or holding giant events or whatever. But I'm guessing he doesn't quite understand what I do either. But he appreciates what I do. That's it. We really appreciate what each other does. And so I thought tonight I'd read you a love poem, because Shakespeare actually describes us really well. He describes our love and our friendship and the way that we accept each other for who we are. And don't try to change each other. We just love who we are. And so Shakespeare said, "Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. Oh no, it is an ever fixed mark. that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark, whose worth's unknown, although his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out even to the edge of doom. If this be error and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved. I love you.
Thank you, Kathy. Luckily, there are tissues up here. And now another very special speaker, their daughter, Emma.
So, Mom, I have to say you're a lot better with the love poems than Dad. Dad once wrote Mom a poem for Valentine's Day. She thought it was a shopping list. Yeah. So it's great to hear how much Dad's changed the lives of so many people, and all these stories just have these lovely, I don't know if they're morals exactly, but things to say about how great Dad is. But I have a little bit of a different thing to say with my story. It's not like that, I promise. One of the things that I remember most from when I was little was every night, I loved stories when I was small. So Dad came up with this family called the Gaga Gugu family when I was little. And there was a dad, Darwin, who could never ever find a parking space. And the mom, let's see, Carol, and the daughter Emily, I think you might be able to see a little theme going here, who had these twitches and they'd always kick people and get in giant trouble through that. And then there were brothers, let's see, Crandall and Abner, who always played poker. Dad instilled a love of poker in me very early. And then Gaga Gugu, who was loosely based, I think, on Pippi Longstocking. And she could lift these heavy, heavy weights. And then when Akiva was born, there was Arkansas, who was a genius. I don't know why he picked Akiva to be the genius, not me. But I don't know if it was every night, but almost every night he would tell me a Gaga Gugu story about their crazy adventures. And we have recordings of them, and every night he would be telling the story about how they went to the pumpkin patch to pick out the giant, heavy pumpkin. And in the middle, he'd start to slowly drift off. And then you'd hear me going, "Daddy, Daddy, what happens next? What happens next?" And he'd tell a little more and start to drift off a little bit more. And I loved hearing those stories, and it was really fun. And I just sort of wanted to share something that maybe you know him from work, and you don't necessarily know him at home. And I think that this is, well, it doesn't really have one of these things that tells how he's, well, he did make my life better, I think, with them. But except for making Arkansas the smart one. I'm still a little bitter about that. But mostly, I just wanted to share with you how he gets really tired and falls asleep all the time. So, oh, I'm glad to know it's just not us. It's everybody. I won't take it so personally now. I love you, Dad. Thank you.
Thanks. Next, we have Karen Stocker. She's a long family friend, and she was actually present at the births of both Emma and Akiva.
I'm just looking at some pictures. I was going to describe them to you. There's a picture here with a little girl. She's really excited. She's just in a wonderful place. She's looking at something that's just like, oh, amazing. And she's held by a man who's bare-chested, and the man is undone. He's just devastated. He's split open by the miracle of life. He's got his hand on the knee of a woman in a kiddie pool. And it's Kathy giving birth, and Akiva's coming out. And there's also a rubber duck in the pool. I was going to say something about neurodiversity, because I so enjoyed the talk about what David does. I asked him a long time ago, about 20 years ago, what do you do? And he said, well, Karen, there are languages, and then there are new languages, but they need a way to understand each other. And it made perfect sense to me, and that's always what I've thought he's been doing. And then tonight I found out he could have said, I'm working about empirical studies of code clone genealogies. But he's just humble and kind, and he loves me as he loves his friends, and so he made it good for me. I'm looking at two other pictures. It's two kids, a boy and a girl, and they really look like they go to Hogwarts Academy. They're so bright and they're so excited, and you can tell they've been studying magic. I'm looking at a picture of a family standing with mountains in the background and clouds, and the dad has his arms around the two women, and in the front is the young man. I'm looking at a picture of a man and a woman laughing. And so I was going to tell you how I learned a bit of Yiddish. I didn't grow up knowing this language, but the word I want to tell you about is mensch. And I'm lucky because I learned about it experientially by knowing David Notkin. And so as a friend, I can tell you, at the same time as he was doing all these amazing things I learned about tonight, he also had said, well, Kathy, just have her bring over all the boxes and bags of receipts, and we'll just straighten them out. Can you imagine a man that bright and with such important work that he's doing, but he's got a friend who has trouble with her taxes, you know? So then he told you also he trimmed his beard when he was a younger professor. That was never about vanity. I know, because I trimmed his beard until Kathy took it over. And it was just one of those things like, it'll be nicer if I trim my beard. It was never about how he looked. It was about how just a sweet human activity. Then I was going to mention what Hardy Ann, our other friend, said when she had listened to the talk about what he's done here. She said, oh, all those nights we were sitting around the living room playing and he was making those bad jokes, that's what he was doing. He was reinventing something over at the university. And how about Ohanami? Because I came there year after year, and what I remember is Japanese people coming across the quadrangle there to look at the blossoms and finding this festival right there, like, oh, somebody knows what you're supposed to be doing when the blossoms are there. I wanted to also tell you, I talked to my daughter, who's 28 now, by Skype today. I said I'd speak. She said, will you tell David he should know he has had a much greater influence on all of us than he probably knows. And when we run into each other, those of us that know him, we have such a delightful time talking about him. And even if people haven't been in touch with him, she's talking about 20-somethings, we hold him so much in our hearts. And she said, tell him I still have 2 t-shirts from that university in Japan. She doesn't wash them so she can save them. Then 2 more things. About Tikkun Olam, that's another thing I heard about. A palace, when it's finished being built, everything's going to be peaceful. Every time we do a good work, a brick goes into it. But I decided every time David just goes about his business, there's a door that goes into it. And it's a door that keeps in warmth, and it's a door that opens to let people in. I'll say one more thing. I'm thinking you probably want time with David. I do. One time he said, we should get together. And I said, when? And he said, well, let's think about it. It's kind of busy for me during the year. Well, I know now he was talking about the academic year. But I think I said to him, well, David, when else is there?
Next, I'd like to introduce perhaps the only person here who remembers David without a beard. It's his older sister, Debbie.
Mike, did I tell you I was going to use that line? Actually, I wanted to thank you all for coming to Not Confess, because since I had the name before David, I'm going to assume that this is actually all about me. And I'm the only one in the room who had the name before David. I told Mike when he wrote to me that I would tell family stories, and when I sat down to think about them, I realized that I don't really have very many good family stories about David. They all end up being about my mom or my dad or me, and David is kind of a player in them, but they're not stories about him, which I think just means that I was an arrogant older sister. So I thought I would just tell you a couple of snippets. Here's when David was very little, like 2, he hated clothes. And he would take them off at every opportunity, which was fine, except that he would then go outside, which was fine, except that we lived in Syracuse, New York, in the center of the snow belt. And I have very clear memories more than once of neighbors bringing back the naked toddler to my mother and saying, is this yours? Did you lose this somewhere? So that's a story from young childhood. A story that some of you may know because it's from his professional life is that when David was awarded the Young Presidential Fellowship, it was a much kinder, gentler time in the days of airplane travel. And pilots were able to make jokes and people could have more fun. And flying back, I think probably to Seattle, but with his Young Presidential Fellowship Award, the pilot on his plane offered a bottle of wine to the person on board who had the most holes in their socks. And I just want you to know that my brother won both awards, the Young Presidential Fellowship and the most holes in his socks. And then the last story I want to tell is a family story. It's about my mother and me, but it's also about David. A number of people have said tonight that David has this way of cutting through to the essential point of seeing the solution to the problem or the perspective that other people don't see. And I know this about him. And my mother and I, for something like 30 years, would fight about money. But we didn't fight about money the way most families fight about money. We fought about money because she wanted to give me money and I didn't want to take it. And I cannot tell you how hard this fight was and how often it went on and how serious it was between us, except that whenever David was there, he would stick his hand out and go, I can solve this problem. And it took me, roughly 25 years to figure out that I could also solve the problem. And And, you know, my mom had a repeating, many of you knew my mother, she was an amazing woman. And the repeating refrain when we grew up that we heard, oh, hundreds of times a year was, don't fight with your brother, don't fight with your sister, they're the best friend you'll ever have. I don't know if David is the best friend I'll ever have, but I know I couldn't ask for better.
Next, I'd like to introduce Ed Lazowska. He's been on the faculty for 35 years. He was the chair immediately before David.
Well, I could tell you dozens or hundreds of stories about David, but I realize these stories are standing between you and breakfast, so I'll try to be brief. David was an undergrad at Brown University a few years after me and John Zahorian, and that connection gave us license to abuse him as a junior faculty member when he arrived here. David mentioned a bit of this in his talk this afternoon after Mike Ernst's presentation. Every Thursday before the colloquium, John and I would go over to the hub and we'd buy a bag of popcorn. There used to be a popcorn machine in this building in those days. And we'd bring it back to Sieg 134 and we would sit in two seats right behind David. And as the talk began, we would start piling popcorn gently in his wiry hair. And the challenge was how much popcorn you could get stacked up there before he would notice and go like this and shower the popcorn everywhere. This went on for a couple of years, and there were two of us who thought it was really funny. Instead of continuing in this vein, I'm going to be slightly serious for a moment. If my calendar and my math is right, today, February 1st, 2013, would be the 90th birthday of Jerry Noe, who was our founding chair. And I'd like to remember us. Jerry's wife, Margareta, is here this evening. I'd like us to remember Jerry as part of recognizing David. Jerry established the character of UW Computer Science and Engineering. We're all family. Families stick together. We support one another. We nurture the young. I think David, as a faculty member and department chair, has exemplified this as much or more than any of us, and it's been essential to us. So, David, I want to thank you for nearly 30 years of keeping us on the true course. Thanks so much.
So next I'd like to introduce Tracy Urbeck. She's the facilities manager for CSE, and David hired her.
Hi. Ed, thanks for letting me hijack the microphone. Mike, sorry. My name is Tracy again, and my boss is Hank. Hank. And my boss is Ed, and my boss is Mike, and my boss is David, and my boss is Crystal. Every table has my boss. However, David, you are my first. For weeks now, I've been having these discussions in my head. What would I say if I took over that microphone? What story would I tell? Because there are many. And in my head, I've been brilliant and awesome and poignant, and everybody's clapped and cheered. And it always came up flat, and I realized I wasn't sure what I could say. And today, I scrapped that plan, and I was in my colleague's office, Megan Reardon, and I was with Jen, another one of my colleagues, and we were discussing this very fact. And I asked Jen if she wanted to speak, and she said, I do, and everything I've thought of, it always comes back to me, and that doesn't seem appropriate. And that was my aha moment with David, and my conversations with him, and my dealings with him in the last 9 years. It always comes back to me. He cares about me, my family, and my life, my career, and what's happening with me. And David, I can't thank you enough for that. It's been awesome. Thank you.
Next up is Carla Ellis of Duke. She's a graduate of our department from before David's time.
Well, Well, my working relationship with David began a long time ago, 1998, when the ACM special interest groups decided to change their governance model and create the SIG governing board. Well, David and I were elected as two of the first members of the SGB's executive committee. And I became the chair, and David became the vice chair for operations, which essentially put us into the number one and number two slots. So it was from David that I learned a lot of wonderful lessons about co-leadership. Among other things, there's no better partner for playing good cop, bad cop with. I've watched him in either role, take either role with, you know, equal ease. So it's really something you can appreciate in one's co-conspirator. So he was a wonderful good cop when he was presiding over meetings, and you can imagine how nice, well, you probably did. He was your department chair. But he let me be the bad cop whenever we had discussed money. And then he became a really, now this sounds kind of strange, great bad cop when we were evaluating the viability of obsolete SIGs. Of course, a really superb good cop, bad cop routine shouldn't be obvious to the intended victims. And so if you were ever exposed to it, you probably never saw what hit you. What hit you was David's passion to persuade about justice, equality, excellence, a welcoming environment in your department, in the research community, and his ability to employ a tactic with a willing partner, which I was more than happy to be, to achieve these goals. In 2005, David and I became partners again as co-chairs of the NCWIT Academic Alliance. It felt so natural to be working with him again. Because as with the SGB, we were creating something new that had never existed before, and so we were basically floundering around trying to find our way. It was nice to think that at least our partnership was something that we had already worked out. Now our playing good cop, bad cop became somewhat more explicit sometimes, and part of our deliberate plan to accomplish our goals. I remember it as a fun time where we would haggle over who gets to be the bad cop and who gets to be the good cop this time. So working as partners with David, I've come to admire so many things about him: his optimism, his sense of fairness and inclusiveness, his empathy, his insight into what collectively moves us forward, his ability to both listen and persuade, and his friendship and his love. So David, I would like to be able to play the bad cop with respect to your cancer and grant you the energy and strength to remain the good cop for the most loved ones in your life.
Next up is Jonathan Aldrich. He was co-advised by David and by Craig Chambers.
So I thought of many things to say about David, but many of them I couldn't say because that's the nature of the advising relationship. But David was David was always let's say very good at giving me perspective, which I sometimes needed. But I will say one piece of advice he gave me, which as usual was excellent. Near when I was going to be graduating, he said to me and my wife, who actually reminded me of this story, he said, you're going out out into the world. Your work is going to be exciting. It's very easy to get caught up in it, but make sure you don't work all the time. And it was nice it was good to hear that from him. It was nice that my wife heard that from him, for my benefit and for hers. But I will say also that seeing, you know, growing up, seeing as David's student, seeing Akiva playing in his office, his family, I felt like he was a good example of someone who had his priorities in the right place. So it's not always easy to manage, but the advice has been good. Thank you, David.
Next up is Mike Eisenberg. He's from the iSchool here at UW, and he's been David's co-conspirator in a number of ventures.
So before I start with my remarks, I was trying to think, what do you do with a Not Confessed shirt after the Not Confessed? So I have a proposal for all of us to work at the UW. You know how we go to Husky Stadium for graduation and all that stuff? And why don't we all wear our Not Confessed shirts underneath our robes this year? And only we'll know about. That would be a Not Confessed type thing. I'm Mike Eisenberg from the iSchool, and I bring warm greetings from all of my colleagues. David was chair of CSC for most of the time. Now, I started with Ed. Ed broke me in and then turned me over to David. At the iSchool, we actually refer to Ed as one of our godfathers. Ed is a godfather of the information school. He welcomed us and really helped us. But David is probably, his role is as closest friend and ally of the information school. You know, David would always, you'd meet with David and he would say, the truth is, right? I mean, the truth is. And what he didn't remember, really know is my main advisor in my doctoral program, that was his research question. What is truth? How do you know? But it's not, and it was clear. I came to the UW and I found out. It's whatever Notkin says. Notkin said. And David had a very clear sense of vision and a sense of what was good and necessary for the computer science and engineering school, for the College of Engineering, for the University of Washington. I can't tell you how many times David would say to me, the truth is, Mike, if the deans and the provosts and the faculty, whatever, would say, we have to focus. We can't do it all. We can't be all things to all people. We can do some things really, really well. And quality, if I think of one word and David Notkin, it's quality. We need to focus. And whenever I would get discouraged or frustrated or even excited about an opportunity, but I couldn't figure out how to do it, the best thing I could ever do was to schedule a lunch with David Notkin. And my wife just reminded me, she said, yeah, how many lunches did you actually have? We had a lot of lunches. No, we never charged it to the university. We always paid our own way. But there was nothing better. And David would always meet me outside of Mary Gates Hall, between Mary Gates and the library. And there he'd be. I know I'm kind of big this way, but I'm rather short. And David would embrace me in one of those Notkin hugs. There's nothing like a Notkin hug. How many of you have experienced a Notkin hug? You just feel the world is okay. Everything is going to be all right. Yeah, that's right. That's great. And then we'd head over some food, and we always had good food and valued talk. But I always felt better and appreciated David's sense of focus, that I was the most important thing in the world at that moment, and I had his attention. And he was truly interested in helping me and helping the university, helping the school, helping society. And Martha said that it's the little things that no one ever will know about. That's really the special. And that's the thing for me. No, when people think of the iSchool, they'll think of me and people like Ed and whatever, the verbal ones, the flamboyant ones, the ones that, you know, okay. But it's guys like David Notkin who really get the work done. So thank you. Thank you for me and for my school.